The Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast joins you once again. The Milwaukee Bucks have a 2-0 lead in their opening round playoff series over the Detroit Pistons. Kind of feels like this is exactly what we expected for the most part. One blowout, one game that wasn't pretty, but the Bucks again winning convincingly. And now we got to catch up and talk all about it. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. On the other line is Matt Velasquez, Journal Sentinel beat reporter, who's been covering this Bucks team all season long. Matt, it's going to be tough to come up with conversation topics because the Bucks doing exactly what we envisioned they would do so far in this series. So as I look over my shoulder, I'm seeing the Bradley Center is completely see-through at this point. So let's start there, Matt. Shout out to another media friend of ours. What's your favorite Bradley Center memory?
I mean, there's just so many. I can't really even pick. I do remember that just all the playoff games there were fun. You know, even the going back to the Bulls series a few years back with the Dudley to Bayless connection for the game winner. It was less fun in Game 6 there when the Bucks lost by like 54.
50? Was it really 54? I blocked that out from my memory.
Oh no! It was a very large. It might have even been 56. It was a It was the largest. I mean, it was history. It was the largest blowout you will ever see.
Wow! Shout out to Jared Bayless though. Shout out to Jared Bayless.
Yeah, and Jared Dudley.
Jared Dudley.
The combination there.
Two Bucks greats. So those, Bucks greats, Jared Dudley.
Former Bucks greats, absolutely. So that game was 54 points. I had it right. and then the Toronto series, the Boston series last year, lots of fun games. Lots of, loud crowds. Crowds that arguably were louder than what we have in Fiserv Forum now, partly because there's more people. So that obviously lends to more noise, but I mean, obviously it's a lot of the same people who are going to the games from last year to this year. But the sound in Fiserv Forum doesn't really feel as all encompassing and crazy as it did in the Bradley Center. Like I said, could be partially due to having more people, could be partially due to not having super exciting playoff games yet. I mean, if you're a Bucks fan, you're enthused and you're excited about the two games that just happened, the 35-point win, 21-point win to open the playoffs, but they're not so dramatic that you're really getting into it. I think the some of the biggest cheers were when David Bakhtiari pounded a beer on the video board, and then when Aaron Rodgers got shown, and then Christian Yelich and a bunch of the Brewers, that brought about an MVP chant. And there was excitement there, a few Giannis highlights and the like, but just the noise, I don't think it's as intense, but we'll see if people can get there.
Obviously, this is a little bit of an inside joke. The start of this podcast, we will talk a lot here about these two games against Detroit. Also got an interview coming up with Darvin Ham. He's a Bucks assistant coach, and many people may remember him. Well, many people will remember him as a member of the Bucks teams around the turn of the century. He was part of the 2000-2001 team that went to the Eastern Conference Finals. I think at this point we can say inarguably the last really good Bucks team compared to this one, which I think is safe to say a better team, but one that is going to try to achieve the history that hasn't been accomplished since that 0-1 team, and that is win a first-round playoff series. Had a very good time chatting with Darvin Ham. We talked a little bit about the conspiracy around 0-1 and some of the memories he has there. He was a starter in Game 7 against the Sixers after Scott Williams was suspended. We talked about that a little bit. But back to this series against Detroit. The biggest issue here right now, for at least from Detroit's perspective, is that Blake Griffin isn't playing. Now he's getting in the box score. He's got two technical fouls and fouls in consecutive games. So good on him for showing up at least in one capacity. But this knee injury, I have to think that if he was going to play in this series, we would have seen him in Game 1 or Game 2. Again, he did not play in that regular season finale. That was a must-win for Detroit to even get into the playoffs. So I know that it's up in the air. Every day is, he's day-to-day, so to speak. But would it surprise you at this point if Blake Griffin, even sees the floor? And it's hard to imagine. He's got to be really hurt. It's hard to imagine him being effective enough to really alter the trajectory of the series, even if he does get out on the court.
Yeah, he's been basically playing on one leg for a while now. Toward the end of the regular season, he was in and out of the lineup, misses a handful of games. In the ones he did play, he generally put up decent stats, but at the same time, just wasn't the same dynamic player he's been all season. And it's been a great season for him. You know, he was an all-star. I voted for him, third-team All-NBA as a forward. Just the way that he has kind of reinvented his game and become just a fearsome offensive player, stepping out behind the three-point line, being willing to take those shots consistently, putting up about 25 points a game. I think he's second to Ersan Ilyasova in charges taken.
Hello.
So he I think probably eight of those were on Giannis. maybe 6 to 8 is probably a safe guess over the course of the four games they played together.
He was number two. They showed that stat on the broadcast. He's 19 behind Ersan for the lead in the regular season. 19, and he's number two on the list. Ersan Ilyasova, the master of the charge. Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, the one thing for Blake is that at least he hasn't broken his nose 10 times. So he's got that going for him. But you know, his presence is absolutely missed. The Pistons, obviously with him, lost the season series to the Bucks, and the average margin in those games was in the teens. But they did have a game in Detroit where they only lost by 3. It was a really close game. And you would expect that as the series shifts to Detroit that this would be an opportunity, if he can be healthy, for them to really push the Bucks in a way that they did in the second quarter on Wednesday, but you know, spread it out throughout the whole game and be able to kind of rally off of their home crowd and all that. But I just don't see it. Like maybe he does play. You know, maybe he plays in game 3 or game 4. But just the way that the injury is and the way that he's looked, when I've been able to see him moving around, it just doesn't seem like he's that close to being able to play. You know, he keeps saying that he wants to play and it's the medical staff that's keeping him out. But the medical staff, they absolutely know there's something wrong with his knee, something that makes it so that he is just not capable of playing right now. And he is a very well-paid asset of the Detroit Pistons. You know, he's on that Supermax and he's going to be under contract for multiple years to come, getting paid big money. So you don't want to run the risk of, you know, in a series that's already, you know, basically out of hand, to risk your future. I mean, this year for the Pistons was about getting back to the playoffs, you know, bringing in Dwayne Casey, setting up a culture and a team and a system and the way they want to do things and build for the future. And so they made it to the playoffs. You know, they got the 8 seed. They spent a lot of time in the 6th spot and they eventually just kind of like fell off as, you know, Griffin was hurt towards the end of the season. But now it's just, you know, they just need to kind of survive this situation, head into the offseason, get totally healthy, and build for next year.
Yeah, the Pistons are in bad shape because they've got so much money committed to Griffin and to other members of their roster. They don't have flexibility to go out there and even really make a move like offer a bunch of money to Malcolm Brogdon, let's say, in restricted free agency. Like, they can't even... This is their roster, and Blake Griffin, you know, I think I made the joke, and I'm sure others have, oh well, they don't want Blake to play because they want to keep him healthy in games that they figure they're going to lose anyway, even though this is obviously the playoffs. But it's kind of true, because like you're saying, he is the centerpiece of what they're doing for years to come, and they know they're not going to win this series, so why risk something for next year when it's pretty clear right now what the Bucks have. The Bucks are just in another league. We're not even going to talk about the first game much. I don't even know what there is to say. The Bucks came out and dominated. And then I thought it was interesting that the Warriors blew a 31-point lead against the Clippers between game 1 and game 2 for the Bucks and wound up losing the series. Ended up being tied 1-1. I'm sure the Warriors will still prevail, but some of the Bucks players talked about that, right, in practice, saying that that was a little bit of a wake-up call that even if you are the top seed, even if you are coasting past teams, you cannot take your foot off the gas. And I thought, you know, in game 2 where things were a little tighter and they were down at halftime, that them bouncing back seemed like that is a team that clearly sort of internalized that message, that they understand that they could get caught at any point if they start thinking, you know, if they start getting complacent. And so I wonder how, I guess the timing of that Warriors loss is a good thing for the Bucks to see what could happen if things, you know, if they get lax at any point.
They all definitely took note of that Warriors game. Even Giannis, who said, oh, I try not to watch TV, I'm trying not to watch what's going on, trying to lock in on what I'm doing, what the team is doing. He said, oh, he came across it on YouTube, and he's like, oh, the biggest comeback in NBA history. He's like, oh, well, I should probably check out what this was. But there are other guys we talked to, you know, Pat Connaughton, Sterling Brown. You know, they watch those game, that game, and they watch all the games. That's what they're trying to do, you know, with their nights off when they're not playing, is they're watching other teams that are out there and seeing what they're doing. And, you know, Connaughton said, oh, that's part of my job, is to watch what's going on in the league. So he definitely takes a different approach than Giannis. But they saw that and they said, wow, like, we see a number one seed, like, getting beat by an 8 seed, and not just getting beat, but having a 31-point lead and getting beat. You know, and Sterling Brown, you know, said, hey, we see, like, that the Pistons can be the Clippers in this situation. Like, they can do that to us. So we have to be prepared. We have to be focused. And the first half that we saw on Wednesday night was kind of similar to a bunch of first halves we've seen this season, where the Bucks will have one really good quarter, one really bad quarter, and then the game's kind of, you know, up in the air. But then they have that third quarter where, you know, I think it was 35-17, really took command, took a 17-point lead into the fourth. And you know, after a brief salvo by the Pistons, a couple, you know, threes to start the quarter, taking advantage of Bucks turnovers, they got it down to 7. And then Eric Bledsoe, you know, put the game away with 6 straight points, and that was that. And so the Bucks, they know how to turn it on. They know how to flip the switch. They know how to go into halftime. And Bud's not going in there being all, you know, fiery and giving big pep talks or changing things. You know, he can read the room and he can see everybody's angry, everybody's upset. Everybody knows they didn't play well. He's like, all right, guys, like, go out there, get defensive rebounds, don't turn the ball over, and play our basketball, and we'll be fine. Like, that's kind of like his message. He's not getting in people's faces or yelling or screaming or anything like that. You know, he knows that they know what to do. They just need to go do it. And when you have Giannis, who didn't play the last 6.5 minutes of the first half because of foul trouble, you know, getting ready to come back in, and he's stewing in that. He wants to be out there more than he was. He knows that the fouls kept him out and limited his playing time, and he wants to just unleash. And that's exactly what he did with 7 early points in that third quarter to really set the tone for them to flip the script.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about Bledsoe and Pat Connaughton, actually. You mentioned Bledsoe, but Pat Connaughton also had a crazy good game. Giannis, I'm interested what you think about the way he gets officiated here from here on out. If the playoff officiating is a little different, a couple of those offensive foul calls and live speed didn't seem like anything out of the ordinary, and certainly not a call that you would expect to go against a superstar like Giannis, but for him to get to 5 fouls with a good chunk of game left was maybe a little bit alarming, because you wonder what that means going forward. These series are not going to get decreasingly physical, although obviously the Pistons are interested in making it a pretty physical battle. But, you know, when they go toe-to-toe with some of these better teams, you're not going to be able to afford Giannis being off the floor because he's in foul trouble. Do you think that the officiating changes in any way during the playoffs?
Not really. I think it's been this same as we've seen all year. You know, he's gotten some of those charging calls that are definite charges called against him, and some of them where, you know, it's iffy or not really a charge and it goes against him. Like, we've seen that a lot. The Pistons know that that's the best way to slow him down in certain situations. Dwayne Casey talked about it pregame, about how guys needed to step up and take those charges and slow him down and make him think about what he's doing when he's driving, you know, because if you're trying to just stick with him or kind of judge which way he's going to go to then turn and go with him, it's just not going to work. Like, I think Dwayne Casey used the word sashay. He's like, oh, you just sashay around you.
Great word. Just awesome.
It was a great word. I was thrilled. When he said that, I was like, oh, Dwayne Casey, that's great. but he is going to, like, sashay around you. He's going to, like, you know, use those huge, like, legs and step right, step left, be totally around you, easy layup. And so if you're a defender and you can't do anything about it, the best thing you can really do is stand your ground and let him run into you. And we've seen it a lot. I wrote about it earlier in the year, where, especially in transition, he's going to drive right down the middle. You know, he might fake right, fake left, do whatever, but he's generally going right down the lane. And if you can make a wall and be there in enough time, you know, coaches always preach about transition defense, but if you can get back, step up, and be right at the free throw line and just hold your ground, there's a good chance he's going to plow into you. And the refs, just seeing you get bowled over like that and having at least some semblance of position, they're going to call it, you know, because that is a very violent confrontation. I think that's another phrase that Dwayne Casey used. I'm going to steal that for myself. It's a very, very violent confrontation there, and they're going to err on the side of the guy who's getting plowed over. At least if he looked like he was there in time, he's going to get the call. And we saw that happen. I think it was Bruce Brown who took one of those. I think that's the most common charge that Giannis has committed this season. Blake Griffin took a couple of those charges during the regular season in the exact same spot. I think Zaza took a charge in that spot during the regular season, and many others. But I remember when I looked it up and was looking over some film during the regular season, that was the most common charge, was him going straight down the middle, especially in transition. And so the Pistons are going to use that. They're going to try and, you know, slow him down in whatever way they can. And, you know, if they get called for a foul, they're like, so what? At least he didn't have a layup. At least he didn't dunk. At least it wasn't a shooting foul because it was so far away from the basket. But if they do get the charge, I mean, that's a momentum shifting play, especially as they head back to Little Caesars Arena, where the crowd will get amped up when they see things like that. So if you're the Pistons, that's one of the better things you can do. And if you're honest, you just need to be cognizant of that, be aggressive, and try and pick the right spots and know what the defenders are going to do. But I think overall, he's being officiated basically the same way. That there's going to be good calls, bad calls, calls that are between, judgment calls that go, like, you know, one way one play, one way the next. He just has to be smart with the way he approaches it.
We mentioned Eric Bledsoe. Obviously, he was one of the big contributors. How much do you think he thinks about that series last year against the Boston Celtics, that first-round playoff series? We've mentioned this before. That is a first impression for a lot of people about Eric Bledsoe. Obviously, he spent the majority of the regular season in Milwaukee, but some of the struggles he had with Terry Rozier in last year's playoffs, that's something that's lingered for Bucks fans, and in my opinion, obscures how good of a defender he was this year and might very well make first team all NBA defensive team. But how much do you think that is still weighing on him? Is he thinking about that? Because he's looked pretty dang good here in this series with the Pistons.
I think he's mostly past it. I think he's focused on what the Bucks are doing now and what he needs to do and continuing the successful season that he's had. But it's just funny to give people a little bit of an idea of, you know, where things come from. We were sitting in the press box last night watching the game. There's like, you know, probably about 6 minutes left, and Bledsoe's just gone on that run, and Lori Nichols sitting next to me, and she's like, you know, I think I might write my follow-up story, for Thursday and Friday's paper about Bledsoe. You know, cause she was thinking about maybe Middleton, and she's like, oh, no, Bledsoe's doing some stuff. And I was, okay, well, hold on, let me think about something for a second. And I have a spreadsheet of every sporting event I've ever gone to. It's a project that I started years ago, and I decided to keep up with. So I looked in there. I have little notes on certain games. So I'm looking at the spreadsheet, and I was like, wait a second. April 14th, that's the exact same day that Eric Bledsoe in the locker room at TD Garden said he didn't know who Terry Rozier was.
What a moment. One of the quotes of the year.
Yeah, no, that was – I was very much taken aback because I asked the question, and he responded directly to me, and I was like, okay. I wasn't ready for that response. So I told Lori, I said, you know what? Once I saw that, I said, you know, Lori, I'll do that tonight. That'll be a big part of the game story. He's you know, scored a game-high 27 points. You know, he's balling out, doing big things, little things, everything in between for the Bucks. I think I got this. Let me handle it. She's like, all right, you got it. So that's how we figured out how things were going to go. As the game was unfolding there with a few minutes left in the contest, everything started to come together and clicked, and that's the coverage you have in Thursday's Journal Sentinel and on JS Online. But Bledsoe, you know, so far in this series has been really solid, not trying to do too much, being just a pest on defense, using his quickness, his strength, to, you know, make things difficult for Detroit's guards. He's gotten a couple steals and just, you know, been in the passing lanes and been part of a Bucks defense that has been really good to start the series. And so he's going to be a big part of their success, you know, or their failure. No matter what happens from here on out, you know, if Eric Bledsoe, along with Giannis Antetokounmpo and Chris Middleton, the way they played last night, if they can do that for, you know, at least a decent number of upcoming playoff games, they're going to have plenty of chances to win. You know, and if Bledsoe reverts or falls back into some of the inconsistencies from last season, which he hasn't shown any sign of. This year he's been really good, really consistent, really smart with his shot selection, really has bought in defensively and has been given the freedom to do what he does on defense. But if he at all looks like he is the Bledsoe of last year, the Bucks are going to be in trouble. But if he can be a consistent contributor on both ends, making smart plays and coming through in the fourth quarter like he did on Wednesday, I mean, this team's ceiling is that much higher.
Wednesday night was the birth of playoff Pat, easy for me to say. Once known as Planet Pat, now it's Playoff Pat. He was outstanding. He hit almost...
Is that a downgrade from a planet to playoff?
Oh, that's a good point. Should we call him Playoff Planet Pat, or is that just too much of a tongue twister?
Planet Playoff Pat? I can't...
Yeah, we can't do that. That's ridiculous. We need something else.
That's too much. That's too much.
Yeah, that is... yes, that's too much. He was awesome. He made almost all his shots. He flirted with the double-double, and he blocked four shots, including like three of them on three-pointers. He was all over the place, flashing his athleticism. You know, I don't know what the rotation looks like when Malcolm Brogdon is back, or if they're going to limit what Malcolm Brogdon does to keep this guy on the floor. We haven't seen DJ Wilson much. We've seen a slight tightening of the rotation, but Pat Connaughton got a ton of minutes. In fact, I don't have this in front of me, but I believe he led the team in minutes last night. What do you make of that? Like, is he going to continue to get this much run, even if Malcolm Brogdon and Nikola Mirotic, who's still working his way back to, this sounds bad, but working his way back to relevancy, once they're at full strength, what happens to Pat Connaughton? He's a star.
I think the way he's playing, he'll continue to get minutes. He led the team in minutes in game one. He played 31 minutes game two, which trailed only Brooke Lopez and Chris Middleton. So I think for the series, he probably has the most minutes of any Buck, which is kind of obscured by the fact that the games have gotten out of hand, and he is part of that closing unit where, you know, the starters sit out at the end and he's still getting minutes as the game gets wrapped up. Once they get to the second round, where likely the Celtics will be there to meet them, the starters are going to play more. Bud's going to have some tough decisions to make in terms of how ready is Malcolm Brogdon coming off his injury. Same with Tony Snell. So far, the Nikola Mirotic minutes have not been good. I think he's 3 of 13 from the floor this series. But more than that, just when he's out there, just still shaking off the rust. Just the offense doesn't flow as well. His defense isn't up to the level of Ersan Ilyasova or Giannis, the guys who would be playing ahead of him. So he's still kind of feeling out where he's going to be. I think eventually he figures it out, but the Bucks don't really have a ton of time to let him figure it out. He also, you know, is playing through pain. That left thumb isn't 100% healed. He kind of has to treat it a little bit gingerly, because if he bangs it on somebody or the ball or whatever, like, he still experiences pain, and it's just now dealing with that pain. If he's going to play, if they waited until he was pain-free, he'd have to sit out longer, but, you know, he's at a manageable level of pain that he can play through it. But so far, just he hasn't been a big part of the rotations. He's played the second quarter minutes that he had coincided with the Bucks taking a downturn and ultimately trailing at halftime. He then came back again later and was just kind of out there. Wasn't doing a ton of great stuff. But getting back to the guards, like, you know, but I'll have to decide how ready Malcolm Brogdon is, how ready Tony Snell is. You know, where does Sterling Brown fit in that equation? He's generally been pretty good as a starter for the past two games and going back to the last couple weeks of the regular season. But Pat Connaughton, you know, he demonstrated on Wednesday just his value and what he can bring when he's on top of his game. His shooting was great. His rebounding, you know, his just playing in the Bucks system and not really forcing anything. And then his defense, We kind of have, we've joked here on the podcast, and I've joked at other times that, you know, he goes for a block all the time. Like he can leave his feet at the slightest, you know, notion that the opposing player is going to shoot. Like he wants those blocks. He wants to contest everything. He wants to use his leaping ability to affect, you know, shots. The problem is there are a lot of times that other teams will recognize that they will pump fake and he will go flying past them. And they'll get a much better shot as a result. The Pistons, I don't know if they just didn't get that memo or something like that, because, you know, they went up a lot. They weren't using those pump fakes. They weren't trying to get him out of position, and he was cleaning up. You know, I think the block in the second half where, you know, he blocked, or it must have been the second quarter, depending on the direction they were going. Yeah, it must have been the second quarter where he blocked. Now I'm forgetting exactly when it was. First quarter, second quarter. It seemed like it was first half because of the direction they were going. But he blocked Luke Kennard. Ersan catches it. Two-handed outlet pass over his head to Connaughton, who catches it. Touchdown, dunk. All that stuff. That one will stand out. But those are the exact kind of momentum plays, those energy plays that he brings. And if he can continue to do that, you know, he definitely provides a lot of value off the bench.
Shout out to Luke Kennard, might be the Pistons' best player through the first two games of this series. That is a very good thing for the Milwaukee Bucks. Before we let you go, I think the next time we talk, we may already know that the Bucks are moving on officially to the second round of the playoffs for the first time since 2001. Knock on wood, the opponent could very well be the Boston Celtics. They're up 2-0 in their own series with the Indiana Pacers. That one probably stands to be a little more competitive. Of course, it's the battle of the 4 seed and the 5 seed, switching back to Indianapolis now. But we've talked about the Celtics and how they match up before. A lot of that centers around Al Horford being the type of player who can give Bucks problems. He can stretch the way Brook Lopez can. He can make shots, and that makes things a little easier for Boston to operate. I don't know if Horford's been a huge factor so far in their series, but as you look at it now, let's say we know tomorrow that the Bucks and Boston Celtics are going to be meeting in the next round of the playoffs. What are maybe one or two things you would really look at in that matchup?
Yeah, I think I would look at the fact that, you know, the Celtics have been playing really good defense, but they really haven't been scoring all that much. The final scores of these games have been 84-74 and 99-91. Obviously, you know, they've been playing at a really slow pace, and they've turned it on the second half a couple times. But their offensive rating hasn't been all that good, and I know that Indiana has a really good defense. But the Bucks also have a really good defense. And so if the Celtics are having trouble scoring against the Pacers, like if they also struggle to score against the Bucks, like the Bucks aren't going to have like that many poor offensive nights. Like they're going to score over 100 most games. And so if the Celtics can't keep up, that's going to be an issue for them. And they've gotten some better contributions from Gordon Hayward. Kyrie has been amazing. But they're going to need to find ways to consistently put up offense, or, you know, do what a lot of teams haven't been able to do this season, which is really slow down the Bucks on consecutive nights. I mean, last year when the Bucks and Celtics played in the playoffs, the Bucks obviously didn't have as well refined of a system, or, you know, as good of a scheme. But they still put up points. You know, Giannis still got his. Chris Middleton got his. It's just they didn't have enough supporting help to take that series. So I think, you know, the ability of the Celtics to fine tune their offense and to keep up with the Bucks is going to be critical. They're going to need to shoot really well. They're going to the Bucks are going to try to force them to play a faster pace. The Celtics will either need to keep up or find ways to slow the pace down, slow the Bucks down. I think, as you mentioned, Al Horford's ability to pick and pop, Marcus Morris's ability to pick and pop will be important. We really haven't seen much of the Bucks against a full Celtics team this season. In basically every game, somebody sat out. So we'll have to see, you know, what those teams look like when they are fully stocked and fully healthy. I think the Bucks, you know, have earned the benefit of the doubt as the favorite. But you know, I've said to other people, I could definitely see the Bucks losing in this series. I could see them going all the way to the finals, and I could see them losing to the Celtics in the second round, because the Celtics are a very talented team. They have depth. They have multiple different ways that they can play. They're starting to maybe peak at the right time. As of right now, that could totally change. I mean, last year we watched the Bucks go down 0-2 in Boston and then go home and take games 3 and 4. You know, there's, you know, reason to believe that Indiana could do something similar. They're a solid home team. And if it weren't for gagging away the end of game 2, they could have, you know, gone back home with a split. So I think there are still a lot of moving parts, but it looks like round 2, if it is the Celtics, would be a very intriguing and fun series.
Matt trying to alarm Bucks fans, giving the thought that maybe they could miss out on the Eastern Conference Finals. I think that would be a horror story for most Bucks fans at this point.
I mean, it's not impossible.
No,
I mean, the Celtics came into the season, you know, with arguably the most talented roster, the team that everybody thought was going to be at the top of the East. They were going to build off of last year's trip to the Eastern Conference Finals without Kyrie, without Gordon Hayward, introduce those guys back in and, you know, find a way to build that chemistry, have all this talent and be the top of the East. And instead, they struggled with inconsistency. They struggled with chemistry very publicly. And they wavered for a lot of the season. But now if they can tie it all together and figure out exactly who and what they need to be and how they can all work together and figure out exactly what the rotations need to be and who can best play together to challenge the Bucks, they could be a really formidable opponent. I mean, this, if I told you, you know, before this season that Bucks Celtics was an Eastern Conference Finals series, I think a lot of people would believe that. I think a lot of people would think, okay, maybe the Celtics were the 1 and the Bucks were the 3, like, or you know, something like that. So, or maybe the Celtics were the 2 and the Bucks were the 4. Like, heading into the season, that's kind of what we thought. So, you know, this is no, you know, team to look past or look over. This is going to be, like I said, a formidable opponent for the second round and what I think should be a fun series.
He is Matt Velasquez, Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Bucks. He will be in Detroit, presumably in the next couple days. Do you like Blake Griffin, who's picking up technicals on the bench? Do you go in a suit when you attend these games on the road now that it's the playoffs?
Most of the year I've been in a suit on the road. A couple of the longer trips, I ditched the suit just for ease of packing and went with, you know, nice, you know, work clothes. But most of the time, you know, I suit up, especially on the road. You never know when there might be an opportunity to hop on NBA TV or whatever. You want to look presentable. I've done that probably a half dozen or more times this season. So it's, you just gotta be prepared, look your best. And, with it being Easter weekend, you gotta look Easter fresh and ready to go.
Easter fresh media celebrity Matt Velasquez. He writes can be found at jsonline.com. You can see him in some videos wearing some swanky clothes as well with some of the stories that have popped up there. So, Matt, we will have to chat with you again very soon. Presumably the next time we talk, we'll be talking about the second round. Who knows, though? Lots still to be determined. Thanks for joining us, my friend.
All right. Can't wait till next week.
Let's go into my interview with Darvin Ham, assistant coach for the Milwaukee Bucks. He again played on that 2000-2001 Bucks team, the last team to get out of the first round, going all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals. I think you'll enjoy chatting with him. We'll say goodbye to Matt, and here he is, Darvin Ham. My guest is Bucks assistant coach Darvin Ham. Many Bucks fans remember Darvin from his time with the Milwaukee Bucks, and now he's part of this new team, this 2019 team that is headed toward the playoffs. The Bucks did release this "Light It Up" video, sort of this updated version of it, the "Let It Fly" version. You are making an appearance in the first one, so how did you feel about that? That there's a new version of it. I kind of like the old one better.
Yeah,
if I'm...
since it's the Bucks, you know what I mean. I appreciate the attempts, but. In comparison to the one that we did that I was featured on, I don't think it comes close.
Yeah.
But right now, it's all about the here and now. So
sure.
We're letting it fly. We're not lighting it up anymore. We're letting it fly to light it up. So.
Do you remember when that video came out? Because that is such a hit around Milwaukee.
Well, the first one I actually wasn't on. The 99 going into the 2000 season. Going into the 99 season. And then the next one. After we had lost to Indiana in 5 games at the end of the 99-2000 season, I was on the next one. That one had Michael Redd, everybody else on it. So it was cool, man. It was a good gesture by our organization.
I had you dunking, too, which is kind of what everybody knows you for.
Yeah, man.
with this team, who is the best practice dunker? Because I'm sure you get to see a fair amount of it.
Best practice dunker, man. I think. Ooh.
Because I think Giannis gets credit for being the best dunker by sheer volume.
Far, yeah, Giannis by far. Pat Connaughton.
Sure.
Sterling has some too. DJ Wilson. We got some guys that can get up there that can fly a little bit. So.
Well, you would be a good judge of this sort of thing.
Absolutely.
What do you remember about Milwaukee in 2001, just as a city? Because I remember this place just being up for grabs about Milwaukee Bucks basketball.
Yeah, man, it was to be able to win here is a special thing. You know, it's not like New York, L.A., and you know, no disrespect to those cities, but their fans are kind of like fair weather. Can be fair weather. Yeah. You know, Chicago, I think Midwest as a whole, I think has a different type of fan base. What you're talking about. Chicago, Milwaukee, Cleveland, like it's something different in the Rust Belt that goes on. But in Milwaukee in particular, I just feel like other than the Brewers, it's the only show in town. Obviously, we have the Packers.
Yeah.
They're a little bit further up the highway. But when you talk about the city of Milwaukee, I think they really put their arms around both the Brewers and the Bucks. And, dude, winning here is like no other because you feel it in the streets. You see it on the television. And it's a respectfulness that goes along with their admiration that I don't think you get in other cities. You know, people come up to you, congratulate you, wish you well. They may ask for an autograph or a picture. But outside of that, they're really nice people, and they let you go about your way. They don't like to intrude. So it makes you feel like it's a family. It's a family environment, and I think they do a great job, and they're going to support you no matter what.
Pretty much everybody remembers the Eastern Conference Finals in 01. Yeah. That Hornets series was tough, though.
Very tough.
Down a couple games, came back to win. Had to win in Charlotte.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, what do you remember from those games? What were some of the lasting images?
It's funny, Taylor Jenkins and I were just talking about this the other day. Well, today, actually. Just how things can change from game to game in the series. Just like it changes from round to round. And I just remember us being fortunate to have a deep squad because we started off playing Orlando. Tracy McGrady was like the LeBron before LeBron.
Right, no doubt.
Averaged almost a triple-double in that first round. We ended up getting past them 3-1. I didn't play the first two games in that series. Ended up playing the last two games.
Sure.
We switched our lineup. So I got inserted to the starting lineup to match up with Jamal Mashburn.
Right.
Who was, I believe, an all-star that year for Charlotte. We go up 2-0 and then they went three straight, and then we have to come back and win at their place and then finish them out here at home. And then, again, you switch the gear another time where we end up with Philly, who starts Dikembe Mutombo and Tyrone Hill at the 4 and the 5. And, you know, me being 6'6".
Yeah, not know, quite as big as those
like,
guys.
Yeah, it's not a good matchup. And so we get to game 7. And after not being called for a flagrant foul and not being tossed out of the game, they suspend Scott Williams.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just – I just remember the heartache, the pain of knowing that we're a championship team and to sort of have it taken away from us, like with one of our key figures who was playing well that series.
Right.
To have that go down the way it did was unfortunate. But at the same time, I'm blessed and fortunate to have been on that team. And that team, you know – is still remembered by everybody here in Milwaukee. Yeah. You know, you remember those teams, you know, 74 team, the 2001 teams, and some of those great teams in the 80s with Sidney and those guys, Marcus Johnson.
Right.
But I feel like this team has the ability and the potential to be right up there with those other ones.
So I want to ask about Scott Williams because that's another thing people remember is the quote-unquote conspiracy, but Williams doesn't get to play in the Game 7. Then you take his place in the starting lineup, right? So what do you remember going into that game? I mean, you probably just said it.
I remember being ready to you know, rock and roll, man. But immediately, like, see, I was known as the spark off the bench.
Yeah.
And immediately, I get caught for 3 fouls.
Right. I saw you had 5 of them in that game.
So it's like, damn, I'm like, we're in a playoff game. I'm getting hit, no call. I'm getting hit, no call. Then I get 3 foul calls. It's just like, wow, man. Like, early. And so, conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe not, but I won't go there.
I'd love for you to talk about the conspiracy.
Is what it is, but it was a lot of fishy things going on around that series. And you got to remember, that Philadelphia team had the most valuable player, Allen Iverson, coach of the year, Larry Brown, defensive player of the year, Dikembe Mutombo, and sixth man of the year, Aaron McKee.
Ooh. Not Tim Thomas that year, I guess.
No, it was Aaron McKee.
I don't remember that. Vividly remember. I know McKee had a great series.
First time in NBA history.
That's really?
All four major awards got handed out to people on the same
team.
So,
yeah.
Who you want to see? Milwaukee and then, you know, the whole Allen Iverson MVP thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. It's certain things have a certain way of working themselves out against you.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, that's. Well, I mean, when people approach you about it, they've got to bring that up every time, right? You guys got.
They bring it up.
Yeah.
But they're so excited about this new team here in 2018, sure. 19, man. Like me venturing out into the community when I'm out having dinner or at the movies or whatever, just. Having a glass of wine, you know, people talk about how really excited they are, genuine excitement and a genuine belief that we can win the whole thing. But, and I agree, I believe we can too, but it all starts with game one on Sunday.
Right. The 2001 team, would it work in today's NBA? Obviously, things have changed. Yeah,
I think so, yeah. Because we had a lot of skill on that team. You look at Sam Cassell, Ray Glenn, Scott could shoot it. Irvin was great at rolling to the rim, playing good interior defense, protecting the rim. Then our bench, you know, Lindsey Hunter, myself, Michael Redd, Tim Thomas.
Sure.
I mean, we'd have done really, really well. And Joe Prisbilla, like.
Yeah, that's right.
We'd have done really well in this era, I believe. I mean, because George was a forward thinker anyway. George Karl was before his time.
Sure.
Some of the stuff we used to do offensively and some of his concepts defensively. And, you know, his overall concept of the 30-30-30 rule, mm-hmm. you know. 30 assists, 30 layups, 30 free throws. Well, you look at today's game, that's kind of like where it's trending.
Sure, sure.
So he wanted to play fast and he wanted to play fun. And so I think we'd adjusted well to today's time.
That's it for today on the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. Hey, you got to find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify if you haven't already. Leave us a rating and review. 5 stars, please, because we're great, right? Whatever. You can have a different opinion if you want. Feel free to reach out to me on Twitter. Again, my name is J.R. Radcliffe. I'm at J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. J.R. Radcliffe. On Twitter. You can also find Matt Velasquez pretty easily on Twitter if you so choose. Also, our Brewers podcast coming out every week, dropping usually on Monday mornings, letting you know how the Brewers are doing so far as we chat about it heading into Thursday, the 4-game series with the Dodgers. They still had, they were matched for the best record in Major League Baseball, so not so bad a start to the season. They've got some tough games coming up, 4 against the Dodgers, then they go to St. Louis for 3, so it's a tough April schedule, and the Brewers are holding their own. So check that out if you are, in fact, a fan of the other Milwaukee pro sports franchise. We obviously will be back to talk more Milwaukee Bucks as soon as possible. Thanks for joining us this week. We will catch you again next week. Take care.